All right, we have one case on our 10:30 docket, Mustang Special Utility District versus Providence Village. If the clerk will please announce counsel who are arguing today. All right, thank you. Mr. Harris.
Can I approach, Your Honor?
Yes.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
I feel privileged to stand before this court who has decided so many sovereign immunity cases over its past. This is a sovereign immunity case. It involves a very particular question that I'm not sure that this court has ever addressed. The bottom line is that the town contests a contract to which it's not a party and that was entered into before it became a town, that was entered into by the Water Control Improvement District and Mustang Special Utility District. Those contracts were for the ultimate transfer of both the water supply and wastewater to Mustang for part of their CCN. The city or the town is in part of their CCN, not entirely. So the point is that they are taking over from the Water Control Improvement District, and I won't bore you with the long history because it is a convoluted history, but they will be taking that over by way of transfer. Pardon me. The town now wants to step into the shoes of the Water Control District, in essence, by way of the declaratory judgment action, and step in and say, we want to raise the reserve powers doctrine as a defense to this contract and have the court declare that it is void. It actually sought four individual declarations, one that it was void, one that there was no transfer permitted, and that there was no obligation for the Water Control District to raise its rates in parity with Mustang. So that is the real essence of this case, is whether they have the ability under the Declaratory Judgment Act under 37002 A or B, in fact, to step into the shoes of the Water Control District and assert what is historically believed to be a contract defense between two contracting parties, and that is the reserve powers. If I might, let me digress for just a moment on reserve powers. As this court well understands and knows, the reserve powers doctrine is generally used to defeat a contract where one council or one body, governing body, enters into a contract for some period of time and later on is either sued under that contract or it's contested somehow and they raise the issue themselves saying, wait a minute, this violates reserve powers. So in essence, what we would have here, if it were factually correct, you would have the Water Control Improvement District coming in and suing for a declaratory judgment, and one of them, or on the other hand, Mustang suing for breach of contract, and one of them asserting the reserve powers doctrine. We don't have that here. In fact, the Water Control Improvement District has admitted in its briefs and in the transcripts of this trial that it has no beef with the contract, and if it's decided to be, if the court decides that it's it's valid, it will comply with it. It has not raised that issue itself. So the question is, can a private party to the contract raise that defense against the transfer and stop it by way of declaratory judgment and injunction? That's the real issue. The bottom line is that we believe that Mustang believes that it is, that the action is covered by sovereign immunity and that it's barred. If we travel two lines of thought, and it's gets convoluted for me. I hope the court probably can straighten me out, but you either have two lines of thought. Either it's an ultra vires act, and where you're alleging that the individuals under the reserve powers doctrine did something illegal or unconstitutional, and they're challenging that, and they're requiring that official to act in a certain way. If that's the case, as we argued in the trial court, then Heinrich and Seflik require that those board members be made parties so that they can they can come in and plead official immunity and their discretionary actions, because that's what would be contested under the reserve powers doctrine, is their discretion in entering into that contract. And as this court well knows, that is a suit against the government in essence and is barred by sovereign immunity. The second piece here is if the government then, or if the town then wants to come in and say, well, it's an action under a contract, and we're really going to step into the shoes of the Water Control Improvement District, and it's a contract action, then they have to follow the grounds of contract. And we know, this court so well knows that sovereign immunity has not been waived for contracting parties. Sued and be sued, implead and pled, so forth and so on, are not reasons to waive the immunity. Does the contract itself waive immunity? No. Paragraph 8C has a waiver for a very narrow vein of the indemnity provision between the two parties. Again, has nothing to do with the validity of the contract. So that's the issue that we're looking at from that standpoint. So from that standpoint, we think that Took versus Mejia and a lot of the progeny, Little Tex and so forth, in order to establish a waiver for this contract, the legislature had to come in and specifically do that. They had to have an express abrogation of sovereign immunity. They want to argue that the Declaratory Judgment Act does that because they're only declaring the validity of the contract. They go to great lengths to say they're not seeking monetary relief. They're not seeking any type to control state action whatsoever. But if you examine their claim, they really are. If it implicates the control of state action, as this court well knows, and I think Judge Meyer wrote about in the City of Crowley versus Ray, if it implicates it, that's good enough. And the bottom line here is Mustang has spent a great deal of money developing this, and over the years they've invested money. So there is a punishment, if you will, to Mustang. They will lose revenues. There's a punishment to that. But more importantly, the TCEQ has already approved the transfer from Water Control Improvement District to Mustang. So there is, again, a state agency, which in a moment we'll cover, has exclusive jurisdiction, we believe, because of its pervasive nature, has approved this transfer. They're going to argue that, well, they don't look at contract issues and they don't decide validity of contracts. We have no qualm with that, but we do know this. They have exclusive jurisdiction to determine who services, who provides the water and sewer in that location. I want to look at a series of cases, though, that I think that are really important, because this is going to come down to the control of state action. I.T. Davy was a case, and I know that this court is very familiar with I.T. Davy. Davy came out with the concept that you cannot sue the entity for money damages, that you have to only take actions that are ultra vires and sue, and it was a breach of contract claim under the guise of declaratory judgment. I think we have that here. It feels like a breach of contract, especially if they're going to step into the shoes of the Water Control Improvement District and allege a contract defense. Second of all, Hayden Dodgden. That was a suit under the DJ to construe a permit. The validity of a permit, that was barred by immunity. Texas Lagos, they sought to void a contract again, and that was where a third party, and I think it's worth digressing for just a moment. The individual that did not get the contract sued the city for the award of a contract to another person. Very similar to what we have here. The court said it was barred by sovereign immunity. Colorado River Authority versus Riley. That was an attempt to invalidate an easement, contractual easement, barred by immunity. State Street Bank, which I know this court's very familiar with. It sought to establish the validity of the contract. It was barred by sovereign immunity. Foster versus Teachers. Over and over again, we go through these cases in our brief. The bottom line is that that's exactly what they pled, and the only thing they pled is they are contesting the validity of a contract. They even say in their brief, we're not contesting whether they can do it again today or in the future. We're only contesting the validity of this one contract at that one time. Does that mean we could ratify it at this point? Both sides could. They have no complaint. They'd be out of court. I think so. Yes, just mine. It's a good question, Your Honor. At this point, we believe that where we are is that the Water Control District wants to stand aside and reap the benefit of their suit if it's declared void without having to do it themselves. But at the same time, they realize they may not have as good a standing, and here's the reason why. Their own corporate counsel in an affidavit said that this contract is good under reserve powers. So they've waived their own defense. They have no ability to walk into the court and genuinely plead that now.
Well, that was the line, the concept that you're advancing at one time, at least, whenever this went to the board for approval of the transfer of the assets.
That is correct, Your Honor.
And so how do they back up from that now and not move forward with a affirming of the same decision and simply standing by your side, shoulder to shoulder, instead of not filing the brief, not taking trial to all those very things?
Your Honor, we were as surprised about that as you were. I really expected amicus, and I was surprised that we didn't see it, quite frankly. How do they back up from it? Legally, I don't believe that they can, especially since they've waived their one of their principal defenses based on reserve powers.
But your interpretation of why this has not simply been affirmed is because maybe they want to hold back a little bit and see if they have the option of not affirming in some future.
I'm not going to propose to speak for them. That is our conjecture at this point, that it's just simply easier to stand on the sidelines and wait the decision to determine. No problem, Your Honor. Glad to answer that. In fact, if I might, they said in the record that that was what they wanted to do, is they were just going to stand by and they would abide by the contract if it was affirmed to be valid, and if it were not, they would look at their options, whatever that meant, Your Honor.
Well, I don't see how they're going to stand before the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality and take a different position.
I agree, Your Honor. I'm glad I'm not there. The last case I think that's important to look at is Creedmoor Water Supply. It was a declaration to invalidate a TCEQ order. Clearly, they said that that was the control of state action. And that's in essence what we have as a backdoor attempt to do here, is to, rather than take our fight to the TCEQ, which leads into our exclusive jurisdiction argument, rather than doing that because the TCEQ has approved the transfer, the town now wants to attack it by way of this court. The exclusive, we believe that the exclusive jurisdiction in this case lies with the TCEQ, because if you look at Chapter 13 of the Water Code, it's very pervasive. I will not recite all of the provisions in it for the court. I'm sure it's very well aware of it. But in essence, it gives the TCEQ practically every bit of control to determine who gets the permit, the CCN, who controls it, how a municipality can come in and pay for, if you will, or buy out that interest, which there's not been in this case. And so we believe that it's the exclusive jurisdiction with it and its rulings, which have already been issued. The last is standing. This is a very curious issue, and I must confess that it has contorted my mind a bit. Does a private party have the ability to have standing to step into the shoes of a party to a contract and assert one of its defenses when, one, legally it's a contract defense and it's not a constitutional challenge or statute, but second of all, can they do it when factually that individual is admitted away their claim? I don't know the answer to that, but it doesn't act like or feel like standing to me. It feels like that even if they did have legal standing, factually that standing has been given away and there's no controversy anymore. I'll yield the rest of my time to questions from the panel. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you, Mr. Harris.
Thank you.
Ms. Manning.
May it please the court. It's always interesting to be the appellee. You don't know whether to start with what you want to say or start with what you want to respond to what opposing counsel said. The interesting thing here, we've got two jurisdictional doctrines. We've got standing, we've got sovereign immunity. And I believe that some of the confusion in the briefing comes from Mustang's melding of these concepts. They want to argue sovereign immunity, but do it on the basis of you can't come under the Declaratory Judgment Act because of standing, which does not address the jurisdictional argument at all. So I want to try to argue each of them very separately, because there are two separate issues in this case. First, standing. I heard an argument I haven't heard before today, and that is that the town is trying to step into the shoes by raising the reserve powers doctrine, which is always a contract defense. Well, first of all, that's not the case. The reserve powers doctrine exists for the benefit of the electorate, for people who elect their current officials to ensure that those officials remain capable of responding to their current needs. So it's not simply a contract defense. It's a way that the courts have said we have to step in under our system of checks and balances and be able to look over the shoulders of government entities and ensure that they're not making decisions they don't have any business making, because down the road a different decision might be more appropriate, just as the case here. It can apply between other than parties to a contract. Well, there's two cases in particular that come to mind. One is the city of Brenham, and it's not that the parties themselves are not the government entities they are. But if you read the case, the court's analysis says that the whole purpose of this doctrine is to keep government close to the people. It says the city of Brenham officials serve it for a short time, and it flies in the face of our system to allow one government entity to tie the hands of future officials. Absolutely. Another case is Gilliam, and I can't remember the other party, but it says something very similar, that we're not going to say that taxpayers or customers can't come in and challenge these contracts. And it's cited in the brief. If I could come up with the other party off the top of my head, I would. I think it's interesting that Mustang says that the Water District has no beef, and that's a complete mischaracterization of the record in the trial court. In the first hearing, Mustang and the district were aligned. In the second hearing, the district was quick to say, we don't think this is an ultra-virus action, and there were really three positions. The district is in a difficult position. It doesn't want to transfer the CCN, but if the contract is binding, it will. The TCEQ says that the CCN can be transferred, but the issue in this case is whether the contract mandates that it is transferred, and that's the question before the trial court. We all know that under the Declaratory Judgments Act, a party that is not a party to a contract can challenge the validity of that contract, can ask for it to be construed. It's real clear in the language itself, but then later on it says that all parties interested have to be made parties, and if only parties to the contract could bring such cases, that would be completely superfluous. IT Davy, this is the case that lays out the distinction. You cannot bring against a government entity a quote-unquote suit against the state, and it defines a quote-unquote suit against the state as one that seeks to enforce a contract, seeks money damages, and I don't want to misstate this, so let me find my language here. Establish a contract's validity, enforce performance under a contract, or impose contractual liabilities. That distinction, that those are the positive versus the negative, is very important. In those three ways, establishing a contract's validity, trying to enforce performance, or imposing liabilities, you are controlling state action. You can disguise a breach of contract case, which clearly can't be brought in that way. And the cases that counsel cited to the court, that's almost completely what those cases say. IT Davy, there was a breach of contract designed as a declaratory judgment action. In Dodgen, it's cited in my brief as Hayden, the other party, is to construe a permit. But the issue there was the party had a permit to get mud shell at a certain rate. The government entity came in and raised the rate, and they wanted to enforce their earlier permit, either contractually or as a permit against this absolutely appropriate policy change. Again, you of course you can't do that. The third case, I didn't catch the name of, but sued for the award of a contract to another person. There are several of those, and what happens there is, you know, city council decides to sell a piece of property to party A. City council either turns over or just changes its mind and contracts instead to sell it to B. And A comes in and says, no, we have a contract, you have to sell it to me. Again, that's compelling state action, and of course you can't do that. I don't know the facts. He clearly enough on State Street Bank, but again, it was to establish the validity of a contract. Foster was to enforce insurance coverage, to enforce a contract and mandate the state do something. That's not the case here. The town has asked for four declarations, and four declarations only. That the contract is void, that it violates the reserve powers doctrine, that the district has no contractual obligation to transfer the assets, and that it has no contractual obligation to raise its rates to match Mustangs. The town does not ask and cannot ask that the district be prevented from doing that going forward. There's no reason why the district and Mustang couldn't sit down right now with current directors and make that contract if the water district believed that it was in the best interest of its constituents. Because that hasn't happened, we can only assume that it does not believe it's in the best interest of its constituents. And Judge Meyer, you asked a question I wanted to respond to, and that is, why have these parties not ratified this contract? A contract made in violation of the reserve powers doctrine is void. Not voidable, but void. And we all know you can't ratify a void contract.
Excuse me, was the contract ever assigned or assumed when the village was actually created?
Not to my knowledge. And another issue that you raised, Justice Meyer, I'd like to address is why the sudden change? Why did these people agree 10 years ago to transfer these assets and now that they don't want to? That really turns on the history here. When the developer went in to create this neighborhood initially, the developer appointed people. They didn't even live there. They didn't own property. That's an issue that's going to come up in the trial court. But the director said, here's what I need you guys to do, and they did it. And then as elections came on and people in the town became directors of the water district instead of these developer-appointed puppets, for lack of a better word, they started to realize this is not in the best interest of our town. This is not in the best interest of our constituents. And here we are.
Well, here we are, but the most recent activity in terms of the application that was filed with Texas Commission on Environmental Quality was not a change of history thing.
No, it's not.
Wasn't that done by the currently elected members of the directors of the district?
Right. And the reason for that, again, the distinction is they asked the TCEQ if it could be transferred. The TCEQ said that it can. It's permissible to transfer the CCN. But what the district wants to know and what the town is seeking here is whether that contract, whether they're contractually obligated to transfer it.
Well, the district's interested in complying with certain parts of the provisions dealing with protection of environmental quality responsibilities in terms of application, can we transfer the assets? But then on the other hand, maybe not so interested in following the procedures for our new cities that are just set out in terms of requiring payment for the lost assets.
And actually, Your Honor, that's a very good point. The Water Code does allow the town, in some cases, to acquire these assets. There are two reasons why that hasn't happened yet. One, the taxpayers of Providence Village are still paying for the assets. So regardless of the transfer, they retain the liability on the bond. So essentially the town will be paying for the assets twice, must say when we have a windfall. That's one reason. The second is, and this goes back to standing, the town would very much like to do that. But with this contract in place between Mustang and the Water District, until we know whether that contract is valid or not, I mean, that's a pretty clear tortious interference claim. We need to know that contract is void so that then the town can pursue its remedies under the Water Code. The real trick, it seems to me, with sovereign immunity, you can plead you can plead anything as a declaratory judgment action. We see that all the time. Not only breach of contract cases, but trespass to tri-title cases. In all of those cases, the whole body of law says what you do is you look to the substance. What is it that we're asking the court to do here? And it's absolutely true with sovereign immunity. And I think it's really interesting, about 5 years ago, the Texas Supreme Court stressed that one of the fundamental reasons why sovereign immunity exists is to prevent government entities from being bound by the policy decisions of their predecessors. In that case, it's Catalina Development versus the County of El Paso. El Paso had contracted to purchase a piece of land, changed its mind, and decided not to honor the contract. And the court said, it's barred by sovereign immunity. You can't sue for breach of contract. And the reason is, we need to keep within the power of the elected officials to respond to the current needs of their constituents. This case, Mustang is taking sovereign immunity, a doctrine meant to provide the free exercise of power from government entities, and perverting it for trying to use it to control the actions of a fellow government entity, the Water District. And again, if this contract is void, it does not prevent Mustang and the district from making a new agreement. It just allows the current officials, the current directors of the Water District, to decide now what is in the best interest of the people who elected them. And if the panelists have any more questions, I'm going to give you back some time. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Manning.
Please, of course, Your Honor, may I respond?
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a couple of real quick points. Brenham was not a case between a third party. It was between parties to the contract. They were both governmental entities. Real quick note about reserve powers. They cited in their brief, and they want to confuse the reserve powers with sovereign immunity. And they say that these cases stand for the proposition that reserve powers can be brought by against a contract. They didn't cite a single case of out of those hundreds they claim exist that would show that the reserve powers doctrine can be brought by a non-party to the contract. Second of all, let's talk about this idea that we're using sovereign immunity to control the Water Control Improvement District. I find that one very amusing in a sense, because that presumes that the Water Control District cannot file its own declaratory judgment action, or could not, and decide to use the reserve powers as a defense to the transfer and sale of it, yet they didn't. That's just simply disingenuous. Sovereign immunity applies to contracts. There is a limited waiver under the DJ for the purpose of establishing validity, none of which have they met, either ultra vires or constitutional question, or, as Justice Meyer puts in, some other things that come close to resolving an underlying case. A declaratory judgment that it's void will not declare the underlying or help the underlying case. It will confuse the underlying case and put all the parties in the position of litigating a breach of contract action between Mustang and the Water Control Improvement District. One other thing I want to point out, and I think it's a hint at their argument. They say in their brief that it involved discretion. I want to point that out. It's on page 4 of their brief. It talked about how it involved the discretion of the representatives. As this court knows, if we are talking about a suit that involves discretion, that is covered by qualified immunity and barred by the immunity doctrine itself. If there are any other questions, I'll be glad to answer them for the court. Yes, Justice Meyer.
A party to the bond issues that were made to pay for the current improvements that are in existence.
That is true, yes, Your Honor.
So even if there were to be some future activity dealing with some future action on the part of the current directors of the Water District to try to renegotiate or otherwise change the terms of the contract. They would be bound to pay or to leave in place the structure for the property taxes to pay the money that owes on the bonds no matter what.
That is correct. Somebody's going to have to pay for the improvements already made and the contract with the Upper Trinity. Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Harris. Ms. Manning, we appreciate your arguments and your briefing. Your case is now submitted, and you all are excused. That concluding our cases for this morning, we will now adjourn.
All right. The Honorable Court of Appeals for the